Hello and welcome to Link Time Chat episode 49. David and I are doing something a little different in terms of the video that will eventually be released. Because instead of using a keynote presentation like we normally do to keep us on track, we've decided not to do that and to instead just record the episode as a video with us chatting. But that also means that as soon as I hit record, we both just stared at the camera and smiled like someone else was going to introduce us.
I tried to give her a goofy smile to make her laugh, and it worked.
It did indeed. And so, yes. So what that means is be ready for an hour of incredibly disorganized chat. Ling time chat.
Not that disorganized. I mean, I was going to keep us on track.
Incredibly disorganized. Damn. Just kidding.
If you see me fidgeting with my hair a lot, it's because I'm me. I just do that.
And also because there has been a new haircut, and David is still trying to figure out how to get his hair to go to just the right place where you like it. But you seem to want to move it a lot.
Yeah.
And so anyway,
checking
yes.
Checking myself out at different angles.
I am.
It's all right.
My hair's good. I won't be needing to fidget with it.
Yep. All right. So today.
Yes, David.
Today we are going to be talking about Dune 2 and all about that. And we could have shown you stuff on the screen, but that would have required a lot more foreplanning, which we did not do.
So this is conveniently timed, because we needed to record an episode. And we just last night actually saw Dune 2 in the theaters. And so now we can more thoroughly talk about the movie and the language and what's in it. We will try to warn you if there's any actual spoiler alerts. I don't anticipate giving any actual plot lines away.
Really?
Like besides basic ones that you would see from a trailer, were you going to give a blow by blow of here's everything that goes down in the movie?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I was going to talk about everything we did at every part, but
in an hour you were going to talk about everything we did at every part.
It's not gonna be like, you know, we're Andy Dwyer describing the plot of Roadhouse.
Nice reference.
Thank you. I just think this should be a potential spoiler zone for this movie that is based on a book that's been out for 70 years.
In other words, yeah, if you don't want to know anything about the movie, I guess stop listening now and come back after you've seen it.
Almost suck.
I think it's only been 60 years since it's actually came out, but he wrote it in the 50s and 60s, right?
Book.
And so 60, now,
65. So next year will be
60 years.
60 years.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time.
So anyway, maybe... Oops, sorry. Mm-hmm. Some spoiler.
Yeah.
But David is now looking at Wikipedia and a little off-centered already.
I was just curious.
And that curiosity comes across in a podcast recording very well.
Wow. Man, this is something. J.R.R. Tolkien refused to review Dune on the grounds that he disliked it with some intensity and thus felt it would be unfair to Herbert, another working author, if he gave an honest review of the book. That is
some
both damning and very polite.
Because at some point he has to be on record as saying with some intensity of his disliking.
Yeah.
Therefore, he gave it a review whether he meant to or not by saying he didn't like it. But then he was like, but I'm not going to actually review it.
Yeah. Also, this is super interesting. Look at this. Apparently, drafts of the manuscript are at Cal State Fullerton.
We should visit it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I don't, no idea if you're allowed to see it or if you have to be like a graduate student or something, but Cal State Fullerton is right near our home. I actually worked at Fullerton College, a community college that is near Cal State Fullerton. It's down the street. Anyway, but what I was looking for was, it tied for the Hugo Award for Best Novel. That's what I was curious about. Anyway,
I think you should bring your laptop closer to mine so that way, as you're looking off screen,
sure.
you're not like we essentially saw this of your face for
Was
the like no, even more like that.
okay. Sorry, I'll try to be good. You know, it'd be cool is if I could just do this and it just showed up there. Bet we could actually use that as a second screen, huh? Anyway, all right. So, I'm sorry. I was supposed to be keeping us on track. So let's.
7 minutes in, and you have failed.
I know. Let's start with a little bit of history. So first, well, actually, because I get this question often. I read Dune my junior year in high school. I read it because my stepfather had it and was a fan of it. He's the one who's a big Star Trek fan, which was interesting because, you know, I grew up watching Star Trek here and there because I had my own television, which is was something in the 1980s.
None I ever had.
I know. So my mother didn't enjoy it, and of course I didn't have any siblings, so it was just me. And then, you know, here comes this adult, and I'm like, oh, really? You watch Star Trek too? He, of course, though, watched the original one. But something that I think was quite special for both of us was a place that you've at least recently seen the outside of, was when we went to the dome where the Spruce Goose used to be held, and there was a visiting Star Trek convention, which had tons of props from the old show, focusing mainly on the Next Generation, but there was also a lot of stuff from Deep Space Nine, and then some stuff from the original series, and then there might have been a little bit from Voyager, but probably not that much. Anyway, so that was when I read Dune. I read a bunch of other stuff that year. That was a good reading year. And then in what was it, 2019? I think it was 2019 that I was approached about working on the first Dune film, and then of course the director was Denis Villeneuve, whom I think many people heard about because of Arrival. I'd heard about him because of Blade Runner 2049. Blade Runner is another interesting bit of sci-fi history. You've never seen Blade Runner, right? You should eventually see it just so that you can check that box off. There's actually a box I haven't checked off. Apparently, the original version of Blade Runner, some producer thought it was too confusing. And so they insisted that Harrison Ford do a voiceover throughout the movie. And apparently, this was widely regarded as a terrible move. When we were in high school, they re-released Blade Runner for the first time, and they did the director's cut, which didn't have this voiceover. That was the first time I ever saw the movie.
So you've never, have you ever seen it with the voiceover?
No, never. So I'm actually super curious now to see, you know, if it's really that bad. Blade Runner is it was very much a product of its time. You can see a little bit of this in Brazil as well. A kind of look at a dystopian future from the 1980s, and what people think that thought that was going to look like. It
And
has
by Brazil, you mean
the
that's a
movie.
movie, not just Brazil, the country. Okay.
Brazil is one of my favorite movies. It's named after a song, Brazil, which, if I'm remembering correctly, is the how holds the record for the longest song that never repeats. And there's a specific genre that this falls into, but where the melody keeps going and doesn't repeat phrases.
But I gave David a look when he said one of his favorite movies, because this is something he does quite often, where he'll name a movie or a TV show that he claims is one of his favorites, and yet it's the first time I've ever heard of it. And it's,
I
let's just
have.
say his list of all of his lists of the plural of favorites are all very long, and I don't think he uses the word favorite in the same way as all of us.
To give you an idea, Brazil, seeing that movie, that was the impetus for the first novel I wrote in 1999. It played a huge role in my life. It was made by Terry Gilliam, who was one of the members of Monty Python. It has Jonathan Pryce, whose voice I loved, who I initially was exposed to in his Infiniti J30 commercials, where I heard his voice and I was like, that's it. That's what high class is.
What's Infiniti J30?
It was a car.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was just, I think it did for me what Ricardo Montalban with the, the Cordoba did it to many people in the 1970s. It was like, my gosh, that is just pure high
So that's
class. I showed you that.
another commercial that I only know about because it was referenced on a show that David and I were watching. It was referenced in an episode of Cheers, and
Rich Corinthian leather.
I didn't know the reference, and so David was like, "Oh, you have to learn about this." And so he showed me the series of commercials. And I'm just
And
giving that context because most people I feel will be in the same boat as me and go, "What?"
sure. Ricardo Montalban, of course, was most famous for playing Khan in Star Trek II. He's
Okay.
the one that William Shatner says Khan about him. Khan, of course, was played in the new Star Trek franchise by Benedict Cumberbatch.
That is fascinating,
Yeah.
and I
He
would
also
love to
was.
see how this loops back to Dune.
Yeah, so and Ricardo Montalban, of course, also starred on Fantasy Island. But anyway, so right. So I saw the I saw Blade Runner and I was like, I didn't think it was as great a film as I think others thought it was, but I thought, well, that's interesting. It does something, by the way. It has, of course, from Miami Vice. My God.
I'm just gonna go to Wikipedia and
And other sci-fi classic, Battlestar Galactica. Oh my gosh. And one of my heroes,
Edward James
Edward
Olmos.
James Olmos. My goodness, embarrassing. I met him because we were at AmiCon in Amarillo the first time. That was a highlight of my life. All right, so I saw Blade Runner 2049, and Blade Runner 2049 is a it was a supposed sequel to Blade Runner. And I want to see, was this before or after Arrival? Because I don't remember. It was after. Okay, so Arrival came first, but Blade Runner 2049 came second. But it was supposedly a follow-up to the original Blade Runner movie. And I don't, it doesn't feel like, I mean, there are definite ties to it. And I don't want to say it doesn't feel like a follow-up. I wanted to suggest, I don't think it should have been a follow-up because it has such a unique and powerful aesthetic. I thought it should have just been a standalone original project. It was so good. It was so good. Just an absolutely gorgeous, beautiful film. So I had seen that. And then that was when I was contacted about working on Dune, saw that it was going to be Denis Villeneuve. And I was like, the person who did Blade Runner 2049 should be the one to do Dune because that visual aesthetic was so perfect. And I was like, that was what was missing. That was what Jodorowsky, I think, would have done. I mean, not like it would have been the same film, but he would have captured an unbelievable aesthetic. Because Jodorowsky, he was the one that tried to adapt it the first time and failed. He was the one that hired Salvador Dali for $1 million a day, and just basically couldn't get it made. I've seen all of his other work, and one of his El Topo is one of my favorite movies of all time. I know.
Another one that I'm like, what?
Yeah, I'll have to show that one to you. That one I think is, yeah. I've seen, I've seen Fondo Elise, I've seen The Magic Mountain, and there are, wait, is it, was it The Magic Mountain or is it The High Mountain? Now,
But this is now what David is now
The Holy
talking
Mountain.
about
Oh, gosh, I'm
is
so sorry.
a failed attempt to make Dune
Yeah, famously. I want to at least show you that
long
documentary. I haven't found
before
it. Anyway,
the
long before.
current Dune.
All right. Anyway, point of this was I was like, oh, I think this is going to be in good hands, because I think that a lot of what readers respond to in the Dune books is the aesthetic. And that was one of the things that was missing when David Lynch tried to do it. Really, I don't understand why David Lynch tried to do it at all, because of course, now you've seen all of Twin Peaks. And it's like, I don't know, it'd be kind of like asking him to do Superman and be like, why? It's not his thing,
Well, I also, between the, whatever you think about the aesthetics of anything previously created, I think now was the time that technology was
Thank you.
where it could be, because the vision, and I always want to say his last name wrong, Denis Villeneuve.
So the first one is V, but when the French pronounce E, they put it really forward like E. So V. And then the next one is just like an O with two dots over it in German with a V on the end. So Villeneuve.
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 Okay,
Yeah.
I'm gonna get there.
Yeah.
But for all of the aesthetic visions that Denis Villeneuve, oh no, that was bad. Villeneuve. I'll
Denis
get there.
Villeneuve, and it's French, so everything's just
Just go
stressed at the
fast.
end.
Go fast.
French and stress it at the end. I'm
That's
sorry,
my
fast, not
goal as
French,
I
fast.
say it. But the technology was there to support his visions, and that was super, super important, which you could see in the first movie how important that is. And it continues to, be incredibly important in the second movie. Because I don't think if CGI and other things weren't where they are, I think a lot of it could have just fallen short, no matter how grand the vision was. But it's like everything was in place, and not only was everything in place, but I feel like the resources were allocated well on the making of this film, because you could tell. And if you look at the credit, if you read the credits, like some people do, like we stay and read all the credits as they go by, not just to see our names, we stay beyond that to read all of them. But when you get to the parts about the visual artists and the effects and everything, the amount of names and people who were involved, it just goes on and on and on and on. And so you can really tell that a lot of care was taken. It wasn't just that, oh, there's this cool technology that can support the vision. It's okay, there's the cool technology, and we're going to get teams of incredibly qualified people to make this happen. So anyway, it's an incredible film just from a visual point of view. And that was something I very much appreciated.
Yeah.
And then of course, from a language point of view,
Right. Anyway,
irony.
so all right. So the point was, yeah, I was brought in to do language for the Fremen, for the first film, and there wasn't a lot. And this is just a short recap. There wasn't a ton of dialogue. There were a few full sentences that were captioned on screen. There was some background dialogue. There was some extra stuff that they kind of thought about, and we gave a try. So, for example, as he was trying to decide how to do the voice on screen, which is this special voice that Paul and Jessica can use to kind of force people to do stuff. One idea he played with was having them use the Fremen language, If you know the Dune books, you might wonder why, but it's like, whatever, it's brainstorming. And so actually we used like an older form where I undid the sound changes and used that. And I'm sure they tried it and just like, nah, it's not going to make sense. And I think I agree, it doesn't. It's essentially, I mean, it's not a language. It's how the words are being spoken. So theoretically, you should be able to use that voice in any language. And so, yeah, they just did it with all effects. And all the instances are in English, but you could actually do it with any language. It doesn't matter. I also did a bit of a chant for the Sadarkar. Had some fun with that one. I created a sign language for the Death Trooper and the Ornithopter that was cut. And then I created the secret sign language that was just supposed to be used amongst the Atreides family. And if you want to know more about that, we've talked about that on this podcast. I don't know what episode. I can go back and look later. Anyway, so that was what I did for the first film. And even when I was looking at the first script, there was stuff at the end. So I was like, oh, do you need this, this, and this translated? And he said, actually, that might get pushed to the second film. And he said that there's not a lot for you to translate in this first film. There will be a lot more in the second. At that point, of course, there was no second film that had been greenlit, but he felt pretty confident, and I think that he had good reason to feel confident. So that was what I did. I also created a writing system. By the way, I had to fight to create that writing system. The art department created the other writing systems for the movie. They actually had created they had created a writing system for the Fremen, but I had a different idea, and they allowed me to do it, which I was very grateful for, because I had really wanted to do a writing system for this, and it came out just the way I wanted it to. So anyway, that was the first film. The first film came out during the pandemic, right? Or
No,
no.
because I was already here.
Yeah, it was
20,
2021.
yeah. So I mean, like,
Tail end. Like, well,
things
no,
were open back up.
yeah, things.
It was, like,
Right. Yeah, because we went to a theater.
And like
The
Meridian was in school.
by the way, that theater was fuller than ours was yesterday, wasn't
I think so.
it?
Yeah.
I was just telling
It's
John, I don't understand. He because he was like, we're gonna go see the movie like in a couple weeks after the crowds have died down. And then I'm like,
Yeah, it's.
I don't know,
I know
theaters
that
work.
there are definitely, from what I understand, crowds at the IMAX theaters because those tickets really are sold out. And
Yeah.
like people are having to go at like all hours of the day just to get in to see the movie. But in terms of just like the regular theater,
I didn't want to have to.
regular theater in regular town, not like the nicer, bigger theaters and like a place where more people congregate anyway. Yeah, we went to see it last night, which was a Saturday night, and it was surprisingly empty. It was kind of crazy, like to the point where when we walked in, it was like, is the theater even open? Like, it is so crazy to me just how much the movie theaters have changed because of COVID. But that's a whole different
All right.
line. We saw the movie,
So
let's
that was
focus.
that was Dune one. And then what I wanted to kind of get through all this so that we could talk about Dune 2, where it's mostly going to be Jesse talking. So
Goodness.
So the first thing, was this your first movie? Because I couldn't remember.
No. Yes and no. It really overlapped. It's really hard to say what came first because I was actually pulled into meetings for Elemental before we worked on anything for Dune 2. And
I was
so,
pulled into meetings for Elemental before I worked on Dune One.
well, that's true. That's true. But we had actually done some things for Elemental, like in terms of like, yeah, because we already had some of those art meetings and stuff. And so it
Dang.
was it was sort of overlapping, sort of, like how we worked some on one language and then some on the other language. And then Like, yeah, the bulk of what we did for Elemental, I think, came after we did the bulk of the work for Dune, but the pre-work building up to that, it was really overlapping. So I honestly don't know how you would determine which came first. Elemental had my first meeting, so there you
All
go,
right.
for a film anyway.
All right. All right.
But yeah.
Yeah. And then as it was like, all right, we're gonna be working on this second movie. I brought you in. There were no new languages, but we anticipated that. Instead, it was gonna be more work with the secret sign language and a lot more work with Chukobza. So, what did I task you with?
Well, the first one was, really, really basic, and that was that you gave me what you documented from Chukotka and gave me all the lines that were translated for the first Dune movie and basically said, learn the language. And if any of you feel like you have the sense that you know David by now, and I feel like you should. I feel like, you have that right to say, yeah, you know David a little bit by now. The documentation was not as clear as one may hope if you're not inside David's head. However, the charts were stellar. So like as you can expect, there were pages and pages and pages of beautiful charts. So those were, of course, very handy. But the actual descriptions within the language documentation were a wee bit lacking. And so step one was just for me to figure out how the language worked because, obviously you can't just go creating, even like if all I did was creating new words for helping David, like that is actually no help if you don't understand the bigger system that you're building into. And so yeah, the first part of my work was literally just like I would actually take the translations that David gave me and work it backwards like a data set so that way I could learn better because that's how my brain learns like at a deeper level is to sort of puzzle it out for myself. And then I would compare it to what he had in the charts and other things. And so yeah, that was my first step was just trying to figure out what I could learn about the structures of the language. And then I spent a lot of time asking David a whole lot of questions about how the structures of the inflections worked. Because in Chukotka, which I don't know that I know we've specifically talked about the sign language that you did on here and the sign system. I don't know how much we've actually talked about Chukotka and its inflectional features, but the way that the nouns work is that there's a lot of internal inflection on the vowels when you go from one case to another or from singular to plural. And so that for me was one of the most difficult parts because like the verbs I felt like I could grasp easier in terms of how the patterns what went where and how these shifted, but it was really in the nouns where I had to spend a lot of time to figure out how gosh, I remember staring at the chart for the English translation as well. I think it's shut out in the nominative. That one took me quite a bit of time. Some of them I got better with pretty quickly, but some of them were very slow going for me. But one feature about Chukotka that I really, really liked, and that ended up being a lot of fun as we worked on the language together was the really, really productive derivational suffixes that David had created. And the derivational suffixes could be used with either noun or verb roots. And so it wasn't like, oh, these can only, take a verb and turn it into a noun. It was you can take something that's a noun at its root and turn it into a different noun as well. And so there were like 24 suffixes that you have in the derivation table. They were all already in place by the time I started working on the language with David. 18.
18, yeah.
So 18 derivational suffixes. And it really gave a lot of room for, because it wasn't like a noun class system, but it really made like a lot of words sort of suggest themselves, where like even if you didn't need the word yet, you could say, well, this is this one particular verb, and I'm gonna go ahead and create like five more nouns based on this verb root just because I can think of them and this makes sense. Not that the word ever showed up in a script or maybe ever would, but it was a lot of fun to really stretch some of those derivations, not just in terms of creating new words, but also coming up with really interesting ways of applying them.
It's this type of derivational system, it's something that's even lighter than a noun class system if you think about how noun classes work. In that, like, however many noun classes you have, even if you've got a large number like Swahili does, the range of meanings you're going to get is fairly low. Otherwise, the noun classes wouldn't really be coherent as classes. Now, these, of course, they're not classes because there's no agreement. This is just derivation. Oops, sorry. What it's kind of like is if you think about what the definition of a suffixed y is in English, or suffixed like ick or ickle, there, and then how are they different? Right? Like, how is ick different from ickle different from suffixed y? And we really can't say because it's very, very vague. For the most part, these things are going to be adjectives, but that's also just for the most part. And I think that we have a very clear sense of, like, well, if you're going to add ickle to this, it's going to mean this type of an adjective. And if you add y to this, it's going to mean this type of an adjective. But even that definition is super vague, not as specific as you're going to get with any type of a noun class marker or with something like ER in English added to verbs. That's way more specific than these type of adjectival things. And so the idea is, what if you just had a ton of those, very, very small, in fact, just closely associated with a consonant, and then you just kind of ran with it. And like, even the definitions that I gave these here are far more vague. Actually, if anything, it is poor in adjectives. The adjectives are pretty simple. But like, we have this one that just says human. And so you might think, well, that's agentive, right? But it's bunch of different stuff. How do we do this in the dictionary? Is it like this? It is like this.
Maybe put a space after it.
A plus, right? Yes. So here's, like, Bela is to hold, and Belit is keeper or tenders. That makes sense. That's a human one. But then let's take a look at some other ones. And there's also a TH, so I'm getting
Well, if
different
you would
ones.
put a space after the T in your search, it would eliminate any THs.
It sure would. Nice.
Wait, actually,
Person,
oh, never mind.
lesser. So these are all, there's leader. Okay, there's bone. Yeah. And so here the idea was, rock with the human one gives us bone.
And so just take a step back. The
Sure.
word for rock is gadi,
Yeah.
which is rock or stone. And then if you add the T to it, you get garit, which now makes it somehow associated loosely with human.
Yeah.
But instead of it being like an agent, like it was for leader or lender or whatever other words you had found, this turns it into a rock that's kind of associated with humans, and it means bone.
And of course, the
Oh, because the camera, so we can do that.
Oh my goodness.
Because it's the FaceTime camera.
Oh my goodness, is this going to be on the video?
I think so.
Wow, so then they
So
just saw that thumbs up. I don't even know how I did that. Is it like,
you just hold it until it recognizes it.
I don't think it's going to recognize my thumb as a thumb. Anyway, but so it's like it's something that's associated with humans, and of course, bones are not uniquely associated with humans. That was just where. Oh, that's nice. That was just where the word came from.
Oh,
And
name
then,
here.
yeah, here's another one. So, curi is word. Curit is name. It's like a word that's associated with a person is a name. Oh, that's where the word for language comes from too, curi,
Yeah.
the collective. That's really nice.
It's a collective of the words.
But then there are others, you
Oh,
know.
this one is super interesting because
Lexit.
lekis is the word for dune, which it is itself its own derivation because Leki is the word for sand. You add the S to make it dune. And then if you have Leksit with the human, it ends up actually meaning stranger or foreigner.
Yeah, and actually, this is also a really good comparison. So hold this in mind. Leki is sand. Lekis with an S is dune, and you can like an actual like a sand dune. Now let's go back to rock. Remember, gari is rock, and garim with an M is mountain. And so you might think like, well, it's the same, thing. If you apply it to sand, you get dune. You should apply it to rock and get mountain if you're going to derive it that way. But they're different, and it's not for, necessarily some principled reason, right? It's that they're pretty vague. M is kind of like associated with places or areas. S is, oh,
Passive.
that's right.
So we
Because
treated dune as a passive structure because it's the sand being blown into a formation, and
That's
so
right.
it's treated as patientive almost.
S is also just how you do passives with verbs. And so it's like it just depends. You start with one word, and then at some point you get to the other word in some way, and that's just the path of its evolution. It's not put together in a systematic way, the way that something theoretically would be in like an oxling or a logical ling. It's just how it goes. Anyway.
But that was, for me, one of the neatest part about parts rather about working with the language. Or I can use the word favorite, and it means favorite. It was my favorite part about working with this language, because it really made lexical creation, the vocab creation, just so much fun because it was not just we need a word for this. It's, can we make it related to something we've already created? And so anytime we needed a new word, the first step was to say, can we logically break this down into something that we already have in the language? Does it match? Does it work? And so there's first and foremost that sort of search through the dictionary to see what we have, to see if we can get something that fits. And then if we couldn't, then it became an issue of, okay, we're going to create a new root, but what root will work best to create, this word? Because a lot of times the new words that we needed were a higher level than a root. And so it wasn't that, we needed a word for rock. We would need that next level of, we need bone or we need something else. And so a lot of times we were taking a step back to say what would make sense at a lower level for a more basic root. So that way we could then get to the meaning we wanted. And again, along the way, we may end up creating four or five extra words just because the derivations were there and we had ideas for them.
Sorry, just spotted an error.
Oh, never.
I mean, it's no big deal. It's just forgot to apply the nasal assimilation.
That was in the word for enemy.
Oh yeah, let me talk about that, because when as Jessie was going through the documentation and familiarizing herself with the language and seeing the documentation's shortcomings, one of the things she noticed, especially as she was trying to learn the nouns, is that some of these did not work the way that the tables did, and that is because I created a structure, forgot that I did, then thought I had done something different, and then went with that. And so, here's what I mean by that. It's pretty simple if you look at it schematically. Nouns are associated with a kind of infixed ah sound in the plural. And in saying that, it's something that would have derived ultimately from a lengthening of the vowel that was then interpreted as adding essentially more ah, like adding more cowbell to a word to make it, plural.
Gosh, you should have explained it to me that way the first time around.
Right.
It's just more cowbell.
Yeah, and yeah, okay. And so let me see if I can find a regular. Oh yeah, this one. So we have, quri is leaf. That's Quri. Quri is leaf. Kauri is leaves, and this is in the nominative. And then as you go down to the other cases, things kind of just get munched around this. So like the genitive is the same as the nominative, but you take the e suffix and replace it with a. So kura is of the leaf, and kaura is of the leaves. The accusative is always associated with shortness. It doesn't have an associated vowel suffix, and so it's just the shortest that it can be. So kur is leaf in the accusative. And then where you would have kaur, there are a series of phonological rules that result in shortening. And so you can't have power. It has to be kur. And so the accusative plural is kur. Then the other three cases, which are the allative, the ablative, and the locative, are built off the first three cases, one each. One is built off the nominative, one the genitive, and one the accusative. And I believe it's allative is the accusative, ablative is the genitive, and locative is the nominative. And so, like unkuri is the locative, so on the leaf, and it's just unkauri is on the leaves. The genitive then would be that's the ablative is e, so that would be iskura from the leaf and iskaura from the leaves. And then that leaves for the olative, the ah one. And so then that becomes akur and akor. And I'm going to double check to make sure that's right. Yep, that's right. So that's that. Okay, so that's the pattern. And kuri for leaf is completely regular. Completely regular. Evidently, I forgot this when I was creating certain words. In particular, words that had as their main vowel u or i, u or e. And it would always be a short one. I think I forgot this, and instead misremembered thinking that plurality was associated with a long vowel, which is a perfectly valid way of doing that, and would have been a nice idea if that were the plan from the beginning, but it wasn't. And so there were a bunch of these nouns that just seemed to behave totally and radically different. And so kuri, very regular, kumi, right above, a word for shade or shadow. Qumi, totally different. Kumi, nominative singular. Kumi, nominative plural. And then, of course, there's kum, which would be the kum would be the accusative, which means that kum has to be the accusative plural, which doesn't make sense.
It's So actually, I feel like the first word I remember seeing it on was Moon. I feel like I was working with Moon, and I remember going to David and being like, I don't get,
That one has E's, it's vowel.
I didn't get what was happening. And so, and I feel like it was Moon, because I think it was something that had either been used or in the first movie or had been a part of something else. And so we had to say, well, that's an irregular. And so then we started looking for more, and there were some that we ended up keeping and just labeling them as irregulars,
Yeah, and
because
this one's super irregular because of course the one I don't list, I list the nominative singular, nominative plural, accusative plural, and then the locative, oblative and allative, but I don't list the accusative singular because it should be evident, but it's not. This one is super irregular, and I'm going to write it in right now. The accusative plural is goo.
just goo.
Good Lord. Anyway, so yeah, you're right.
I know this frustrated David to no end. But to me, I thought, honestly, it's kind of a neat way to introduce some irregularities into a system where it's a quirk where there's absolutely no other explanation other than it was just a word that had shifted in ways others had not. And this happens in languages where linguists, at the end of the day, doing historical reconstructions, they just look at something and say, quite frankly, we cannot explain how this form emerged other than it was just what people were saying. And so that's how it got said. And that's the end of the story. And this was a way of naturally doing that. So at no point did we sit down and say, here are the words, we're going to turn irregular. And every single instance where it happened, it was a word that was frequent enough that it made sense, like moon or shadow. And they got used in a lot of different patterns. So it's like it made sense that there could have been something else going on. And it's just like such a frequent word that it just sort of stuck and that happened. And so it to me was actually a really neat thing to happen. I know David was, again, to no end, absolutely frustrated that he had maybe made a tiny blip of a mistake.
Yeah, it was I was working on House of the Dragon for the first time at the same time. And yeah, I just and so what I had to do was I actually went back and found every instance of this. Some of them I kept as irregulars because they instantiate a pattern, even if it's a different pattern. Some of them I regularized, and redid their declension patterns. This one I kept anyway, but I don't remember how we got here, but I will say that one of the first things that I did, which is one of the first things I do with every project, is I went through the script and I tagged every single line for translation, and it was
A lot.
a lot. I'm actually going to open the because I had 16 drafts of the document that we worked on, by the way. First one doesn't, that can't be right. I guess it was. Anyway, I hadn't used it yet, but the first one had 159 lines of translation that were called for, which was more than I had ever done on any single project. By the end of it, this is just for the main script. Actually, I think there's more. Let me look for the red earlier. I thought there was. Well, for the main script, we had 206 lines. And then What we got at the end was the walla. Walla is a word for background dialogue. And we have, oh my God, we have 80 pages of it.
Yeah. And so what he's saying is there's another 80 pages of dialogue that we created, of sayings and lines of extra things they asked for in post-production. Some of it they actually asked for as they were filming. Some of it is featured, and by featured I mean like one of the main characters is speaking, and so they ended up just adding lines or asking for extra lines to be translated. Some of them though are things that are just said in the background, and it's like a crowd chanting at once, and so like you may only hear one bits and pieces from what's being said in the background. So some of it is true walla, where it's just a wall of sound. You can think of it that way. And some of it was then also added. And I think one of the most interesting things that we added after the fact was that when they had filmed, they hadn't had all of the background actors speaking in Chukotka. Then they decided that those actors should have been speaking in Chukotka for the scene to make sense. And so they sent us a video clip and asked us to match the lip movements and get as close as possible to a particular meaning. And so, like, the actor had, when filming, been speaking in English. In post-production, the actor came back in and re-recorded that line in Chukotka that we created to match the lip movements as much as possible to the English. And let me say, we all did such a good job that David had forgotten about that bit and didn't even notice it as we were watching the movie.
Yeah, not
It
even
was
close.
only later when I mentioned how happy I was with how that turned out that he went, "Oh my gosh, I forgot." And so, like, it was so the actor did an amazing job. The sound people did an amazing job getting everything lined up just right because. And getting it to match, like that blows my mind where they can merge the sound files together where it doesn't sound like you took this person and said, out of context now, I'm gonna have you record this line and it's gonna be overlaid. It's just everything was really beautifully done, and I was super impressed.
Yeah, this is an instance, and poetry is another that I can think of, where you're sitting there with your conlang, and it's like if somebody just asks you, how do you say this? You say it like this. But then when you're forced to be put in a situation where you say, like, somebody tells you, I want to say this, here is the constraint. And suddenly it's like, well, you can't say that in the most straightforward way anymore. So what are you going to do, right? And I think that's one of the really neat things about poetry. Poetry essentially forces you to ask that question and say, like, the most straightforward way of saying it is this. However, that doesn't fit the meter. So what are you going to do? And then it's like you just say, okay, well, I mean, your choice is really, okay, I'm just going to write bad poetry and just try to make this fit the meter. Or I'm going to sit here and reflect and think, this is my language. This is the system. These are the words I have. These are the words I can create. What could I do to convey that meaning in a way that I previously had not thought of? And this was just an example. And I have to say for myself, I don't know about you, because I've done this a few times. Every single time, the first thing I think is, that's impossible. It can't be done. And then it's like I said for that, well, like, well, I guess you could do this. And then it's just that's where it starts. It's like, well, I guess you could do that. And then it's like, well, if you can do that, you can do other things.
And with this particular
Do you remember by any chance
Remember what?
the line?
I mean, I remember bits. Do we want to pull it out? Do we want to call it to attention, or do we just
Oh, I
want
don't
to
see
let
why.
people know that?
I don't see why not. I mean, it was so good that, like, even if you go and look at it, you won't be able to know. Which one is it?
It.
This is a random page. I mean.
Yeah, but it's definitely in that area. I actually, can I grab your computer? And one of the things that we actually started with, by the way, with that scene was just watching the lip movements over and over and over again to say, what can we fudge, right? Like, what is not super visible in terms of what's happening in the mouth, which I don't know, about 67% of what we say is actually not super visible on our lips.
Very helpful.
And so, but then where did, the lips close? That's evident. So we need to have, some sort of bilabial sound there. And so I know we did that. Okay, that may have been
That was it.
That was it, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we have a whole note. So the descriptions that we were giving, what this character said in English was, "We'll slaughter him later." And we're creating something to match the lip movements of the character saying that. That also meant something very, very similar. And in this case, we managed to get, and we will kill him afterwards. And so the and was nice, and is he. And notice that this in English, we're starting with wheel, right? And based on like, because we were watching this, you think with will, you get the lip rounding, right? But it didn't look like it. Instead, what you saw was the kind of like pursed lips and raised tongue of the kind of for in the will, or we like something like that. And so,
It was actually so,
oh, or is
no, it
it?
was that the lips were pulled back more in the E
Yeah.
sound. Because when you say wheel, and like I'm looking at the video, and I know as a podcast you can't see it, but later on a video you can. When you say wheel, he, like the lips are not as different as you may think, because you're getting a E, you're getting that slight lip pullback that was showing up in the video. But the wa didn't come out like a rounded wa, like if you did it in isolation that it would have. And so because of that, because it's in context, because we're not doing perfect sounds every time we speak and all the sounds just come together and really affect each other, that really helped out because we didn't have to worry about the initial wa at all. And so the he, which means and in Chukobza, matched up with the we of the English.
And the last word, so the whole light is Ibizadim ho nojaha. And I mentioned this because the last part was, for the nojaha is corresponding to later. And I mentioned that for the last part, you can just kind of, when you get to the aha part, it can be a little like, breathless, like nojaha, like that type of thing. And it would fit really well with the later. And I know that you don't believe me. I swear, if we look at the video, it makes so much sense. Anyway, but now you can.
It's no, it really
Because I
like
didn't know that.
it sounds a little bit crazy if you're just like thinking about it in terms of the mouth movements that are required and the number of syllables that are in each. So it sounds crazy, but again, it was so smooth that David didn't even notice it, and he had worked with that scene. So it's like he should have, right? Like memory should have triggered there.
Yeah, that's
Because I
right. We
specifically, as soon as I saw the scene, I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. And I really watched the actor, and it just the language sounded like it fit. And so it is also really interesting that you can end up shoving more syllables into, as long as the mouth is in motion, you can shove more syllables in, I think, than take syllables out, because it would have been awkward if we had fewer syllables. And it's like, but the mouth is still moving. Like, I feel like
Right.
that actually would have been worse. But because you can speak really quickly, because the way that we'll slaughter him later was delivered, it was kind of said a little bit longer and more emphatically, I think. And so that gave us more room to play with, where a lot of the syllables that happen in the Tscherkobza line happen on the alveolar ridge and back, which means that from the outward point of view, you're not seeing all the syllables making the lip movements. And so it ended up working really well. We timed it out. We even, like David, when he actually did the MP3 recordings for that line, had the video playing on the computer every time he said it. So that way he made sure he had the timing just right. So that way when he sent it back to post-production with these notes, he was able to say, this is the speed. This is it.
Yeah, that was fun. And honestly, if of all people on Earth, I didn't notice it, that means that they did a really good job.
That is really, really true. So true. And we're coming up on the end here, David. We didn't necessarily, so no spoilers, because that literally gave no spoils right there.
I
So
know. This is all my fault.
whenever I type up the thing, I will say there were no spoilers because we really did not go into detail.
This is all my fault. I'm really
But it
sorry.
really, no, it, I mean, it just went in a direction. it's the David direction. What I was, I think, happiest about was the treatment of the language in the movie as being important, and how they really worked to put it in scenes where it made sense. All too often, I think it's always going to be easier to just have the actors speak in English for an English movie, right? Like, so they already know most of your lines are going to be in English. So whether or not you're a native English speaker, like that's just the language of the film. And so like when you're looking at the actual process of making the movie, there are so many difficulties that get inserted along the way, like props and costumes and, sets and being on location and having the equipment and everything, all of these complicating factors. To be willing to say we're going to add this other complicating factor, this language that not only do they not speak, but there's no way they could speak it because it's not a language they could have studied in school. Like this is a brand new language for them. To have the amount of time and energy devoted to the language that they did was amazing, and they went a step further and really made it feel like any time Tscherkobza logically should have been being spoken, it really was. There were very few lines where they switched to English when it would have made more sense for Tscherkobza to be spoken. And to me, that is really, really impressive. And I also am just really, really happy with the outcome. I really think it feels like that language and that world are really fully fleshed out because, well, fully, I mean, you can always go deeper, but it's really fleshed out and it really makes sense. And well, I'm a little bit biased, but I think it's really quite beautiful to hear the language in action. And the actors, you could tell, had really practiced with deliveries in terms of you could hear emotion in the language. And so like, whether or not any set of sounds were perfectly pronounced, at the end of the day, when you hear it, you hear the emotional delivery in the language. And I think that's really, really incredible. And so that's my sort of end cap to that. There's a lot of our language in it, and it's super exciting.
There was also a lot of stuff, like, we didn't get to it, but I wanted to get to all the stuff that Jesse created specifically that was really better than anything I'd done before, and that made me really super glad that she was there. But we didn't do that, so you're just gonna have to take my word for it. Like, all the best stuff in this language is her.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun to work on it.
Yeah.
All right, so that is our We Just Saw Dune. And
There you go.
hooray!
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. And until next time, stay grammar.
Bye, everybody.